The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
So, welcome to everybody this evening. Quite a cold evening here in Melbourne. Welcome to the Buddha Loka Centre, which is the headquarters, you could say, of the Buddhist Society of Victoria. And for those who don't know who I am Ajahn Lissarano. And I'm a monk who ordained with Ajahn Brahm about 24 years ago. And this will be actually my quarter of a century Vassa this year. Vassa is the rains retreat. Each year we have a 3 month rains retreat. So I'd like to make some announcements. I guess there may be some announcements. The only ones that I can think of are that on Friday evening there will be an introduction to Buddhist meditation, introduction to meditation for beginners. It's really aimed at those who haven't had much experience. So that will be on Friday evening with Ajahn Sadaro, the resident monk. And then, of course, the usual program will be on Sunday, the Dhamma talk, the Sunday morning program, where we have take precepts, do a bit of chanting and have a talk. And then I can see Chinta approaching, so she's got some announcement. I was going to ask, does Chinta have some announcement? Yeah. Ah, Sandeep. Oh, that's a good point, yes. Just to let everybody know that Tuesday we have a meditation, ongoing meditation class, and that's run by Sandeep. And just to let you know, that's cancelled tomorrow evening because he's not well. I don't think it's COVID, is it? No? Don't think so, anyway. So just for those that were planning to come, you know, just keep that in mind, that it won't be on tomorrow night. And just to let people know the format, it's the usual format. We have an introduction followed by a guided meditation for about 45 minutes. And then we have comments, questions and complaints. So I don't get many complaints, actually. And are there any people who are new to meditation here? Anyone new to first time? Oh, that's good. It's good that you've got some experience. I don't usually ask, but afterwards I wonder if I lost them. But usually the way I explain it is pretty straightforward. So I think most people can get something from it. Though 45 minutes can be a long time if it's your first meditation. But if you know people who are interested in learning meditation, then the beginner's class will be the introduction to Buddhist meditation would be a good place to start. So I was just going to give a bit of background to the... I like to have a theme. Every week, every time I teach a guided meditation, I have a theme. So this is the introduction to the theme. But tomorrow is... some Sri Lankan people here. Do you know what tomorrow is? Poson, it is, yes. It's also Tuesday. But we have, yes, it's the full moon. It's the full moon. So tomorrow will be the full moon of June. And it's a very significant day in Buddhism, and particularly for Sri Lankans, because it's the arrival of Buddhism to Sri Lanka. When the Venerable Mahinda arrived in some time ago, actually, 247 BC, they say. That's quite a long time ago. And so not so long after the passing away of the Buddha. And it's a very, it's a much celebrated occasion in Sri Lanka. And I've heard, I haven't seen it, but the main site for the celebration, which is where Buddhism sort of arrived, there's usually about 2 million people. So it's quite a big occasion, but it's also important for the world because had that not happened, had not Buddhism come to Sri Lanka, we would not necessarily have preserved some of the early Buddhist teachings in the Theravada school, at least. And you see most of the early Buddhist schools vanished. They weren't a living practice later, and their teachings... There's only some of the manuscripts surviving, but not complete teaching. So we're very lucky that Sri Lanka preserved the teachings and, in actual fact, wrote them down in 80 BC because the famine was occurring. And previously, everybody remembered, the monks remembered, the nuns remembered the Buddha's teaching by heart. But as the number of monks and nuns who were dying due to the famine was increasing, some of the texts were getting close to being lost, so they thought, write it down. And it's great that they did, actually. So, and if you're interested, I gave a talk yesterday on that theme, actually, so I won't go into that and won't go much more into it. But the first teaching that monk who came to Sri Lanka, Venerable Mahinda, he was the Emperor Asoka's son. So he was the king's son from India. And so it was quite a, probably he was known in some ways to the king that he met. He met the king of Sri Lanka in the forest hunting. And then he gave him a bit of an intelligence test, which he passed very well. Actually, I asked it yesterday. Nobody got it. I thought, wow. But it would have been easier if you'd actually had a live example. You know, you pointed to, it was all about trees, and if you actually pointed to trees, it might have been easier. But when you hear it, it's a bit tricky. But he gave a teaching called the Shorter Discourse on the elephant's footprint, the simile of the elephant's footprint. And this is all about the gradual training. And this is the theme for this evening, will be about the gradual training, an aspect of it, because it's a really significant term in the Buddha's teaching, training. It's sika is the Pali word. This is the language of the Buddha's time. Sika, training. And we have training rules, sikapada. And training is quite an important thing. Who's doing the training, do you think? We are. The Buddha's giving the hints, actually, but if we do the training. And training is really, for me, it's a word for reconditioning our minds, you know, resetting our minds, replacing our negative habits with positive habits, with positive attitudes, which is really helpful for our lives, but it's also very helpful for the path, for practicing meditation and for becoming enlightened. So this is the aim of training, actually. And it's an important teaching because he gave it a number of times, the Buddha, and it appears in different places. So this monk who came to Sri Lanka, he was teaching this teaching of the Buddha. I'm sure he went into a lot of detail. And I didn't say yesterday, but some of the teachings they had in Sri Lanka from monks lasted the whole night. Can you believe it? A talk going for the whole night. Wow, it'd have to be a good talk, I think. And so it's a very practical teaching, this gradual training. It's a step-by-step process that leads from the beginning of the path to the end of the path. And it's really, in a sense, a series of causes and effects, one leading to the next. And so it's very relevant for developing meditation, because you see, when I mention the factors of the gradual training, you'll see how they lead to enlightenment. But the pivotal, the most important area is meditation, because it's through meditation that we really develop the power of the mind. We really develop the ability to focus, to penetrate, to look into. We really calm down all the negative aspects of the mind. And that's where the power comes from, getting those things being cleared out of the way, clearing the path, they sometimes call it. And then seeing things as they truly are, and then insights, and then awakening, in fact, the different phases of awakening. So I'll just mention briefly the gradual training, and then I'll get on to the aspect of it that we'll focus on this evening, or I suggest it's good to focus on. So in that training, the Buddha starts with the arising of a Buddha. I mean, that's, it's sort of assumed in a way, isn't it? But it's a very important factor. something that doesn't happen very often. It's a very rare occasion, a natural occasion, but a very rare occasion that somebody develops the power to see reality as it is and be able to teach it to other people and give them a path to practice and teach the Dhamma. So this is the rising of a Buddha. It leads to the teachings being available, the Dhamma, and the path of practice. And as I said yesterday, all the teachers we have today, like myself, like Ajahn Brahm, like Goenka, even Goenka actually, we're all assistant teachers. We're assistants of the Buddha. And so it's very important to have that connection with the Buddha. And in that teaching, someone hears a teaching of the Buddha. It may be from the Buddha himself in those days, but a disciple of the Buddha. It could be today, of course, hearing a teaching today. And it really connects with them. They really hear it. And it's very relevant to them. And then when that happens, faith arises or confidence. They think, wow, this is something that could be very useful for my life. It makes sense of what I'm experiencing. So this is very, and this rising of faith or confidence is really important, because we only ever do what we think is really important, think is valuable. If we don't think something's valuable, if we don't think it's worthwhile, we're not going to put energy into it. But if we do, then we'll put energy into it. Energy will come, actually. And then we will apply that energy. And, of course, the next step of the gradual training is that we practice morality, ethical conduct. And this is, of course, you know, body speech, but also the mind. And in Buddhism, we have the 5 precepts, we have the 10 precepts. And these are trainings, you know, for us to develop, to let go of negative habits, for instance, killing living beings, deliberately killing living beings, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, and lastly, taking alcohol and drugs that cloud our mindfulness, our awareness. So these things are, these precepts actually support developing the meditation, because if we sit down in meditation, I can tell you, whatever we've done and said we're not very happy about, that wasn't good, it will come up, it will disturb the mind. So it's very important, these precepts. It's very important for developing the whole of the path. And then the next phase that the Buddha mentions, the next part of the gradual training, is developing contentment. This is important, because if we are content, we're happy to be in the present moment. We're happy with what we've got, and therefore the mind is not moving out looking for something to find happiness in, pleasure in, a nice sound, good conversation, a nice sight, whatever it be, through the 5 senses. So this contentment is very, very important, and that's what I'm going to talk about tonight, just a little bit actually, because we're getting late. And from contentment, then the Buddha talks about practicing sense restraint. Sense restraint means, it's a really important part of developing the mind, because our minds are pulled around by what we see, hear, smell, taste and touch. If you're in any doubt of that, just check out the internet. You see the news, see something, you think, oh my goodness, how could they do this, you know? And we get really upset, or we get angry, we get many different emotions, you know, depending on what we see. So this sense restraint, this ability to say no to things from wisdom power, it has to come from wisdom. It's not really willpower. People think of it as willpower. It sounds like it when you say sense restraint, but it's actually wisdom power, understanding that these things, they really agitate the mind. They really burn the mind, whether it would be strong desires or strong negative feelings like anger, annoyance, irritation, all those things. They really pull the mind around. And when we're developing meditation, we're looking to quieten the mind down, calm the mind down, let go of the hindrances, the negative things that block the meditation. So this is preparation for that. And of course, the next aspect of the Buddha talks about is what we call full awareness, or Ajahn Sajjato calls it situational awareness. So we know what's going on in our lives. We know we're mindful, we're aware of what we're doing, and very importantly, this aspect, why we're doing what we're doing, why we're doing it. And so this is an important way to actually to reduce the defilements, the negative states of mind that can arise when we're just going about our business. And the Buddha gives an example of a monk going on alms round into the village, you know, and so having this sort of awareness, but restraining the mind, not allowing it to get carried away with what it sees or hears, all those things. And then a person's ready, once they've got this sort of sense of contentment, once they've got this sense of sense restraint, they're ready for meditation. They sit down and meditate. And then to let go of the negative states of mind, the strong desires in the mind, the strong ill will in the mind, and we call it dullness and drowsiness, so sleepiness really, and then restlessness and remorse and doubt. So these are five categories that the Buddha mentions that stop us from going deep into meditation. And when we're sitting in meditation, it can be in the form of things like, you know, the mind thinking about things we've done, you know, nice meal we had, or what's happening in sport, or all these things. Anything connected with the world, actually, outside of ourselves. Because meditation is going inside. This is where we are looking for our happiness, inside. And then when this meditation settles down, the Buddha mentions in the next stage, it can go into this deep meditation called the jhanas. There's four of them. And this is where the mind cuts off from the world completely, gone. No hearing, smelling, tasting and touching. And then some people, when they experience deep meditation, it happens, you know, it can happen out of the blue for people. It can really frighten them because we're so used to the five senses. We're so connected that it really scares us when we're cut off from it, because it's the world we know. And when we are going into these deep meditations, we're going to another world, and that's the world of the mind. And actually, that's the world that creates a lot of the outside world anyway. What we think is we're attractive, what we like, what we don't like, comes from our minds. And we are the ones actually really that are investing things with beauty, with a pleasure. You know, we, for instance, I mean, we can all see food. One person might think, wonderful, magnificent, delicious. Another person might think, yuck, awful. So it's obvious, really, but we don't really reflect on that, actually. We often think it's out there. It's all out there. But we're the ones making these things tasty, or the sights beautiful, whatever it is. We're the ones doing it, actually. It's from the mind. It's really from our conditioning of what we're used to. And I see that so much with food, with all the different monks. We have monks from different traditions. So we have Sri Lankan monks. They like Sri Lankan. They're used to Sri Lankan food. And if they don't get it, they'll probably get sick, actually, and so on. And I see English monks like Ajahn Brahm, very English food. I think, wow, not for me, thanks. But, you know, so it is so much of its conditioning, what we like, what we dislike. And so all these things, but we're going into the mind. And based on, and then the Buddha continues, based on the power of that mind, the stillness, the energy, the power, the mind can then see very deeply. And the first insight the Buddha mentions that occurred for him is to see his past lives. And he saw millions of past lives. We'd be lucky. Most people are lucky if they see one past life. And then that can be very scary if they see that past life. Interesting, but often it takes the form of seeing the most significant event in a past life. What do you think that would be? One of the biggies? Death, yeah. that's hard to handle if you, and it's not like you're just uninvolved, you know, you're really experiencing it. So the Buddha saw millions of past lives when he was had different bodies, different names, different family connections. He saw the things that he enjoyed, the things that he didn't enjoy. He saw and saw the passing away from that life. And then the next thing the Buddha mentions in this gradual training, and this is for all of us actually, this gradual training, not just for Buddhas, is that he saw that the way people the way they're reborn is due to their actions from their past life and former lives, and that is what drives them. So good actions leading to a good destination. When we say actions, it's actions by body, speech and mind. And mind is really a strong one, isn't it? It creates the world we live in here and now, and it'll create the world that we will be reborn in. And then the Buddha mentions the next phase, or the next development, is the person sees the Four Noble Truths. These are key teachings in the Buddha's teaching, really. And they're usually described as suffering or unsatisfactoriness, the cause of that, the ending of that, and the path to that allows us to end unsatisfactoriness or suffering. And it sounds very theoretical when I say it like that, but when you think of, say, the Buddha's experience of seeing his past life, he would have seen so much of the problems that he experienced in so many lives. He would have seen, I never, ever found that permanent happiness in any of those lives. I had to keep moving on. My body got old and then it passed away. And then I moved on to a new life. And he would have asked, as we would naturally feel, with all these different bodies, all these different names, all these different experiences, who was really me? And of course, that gave him the breakthrough to see, no, there's not a permanent me. It's like a work in progress. It's changing over time, over lifetimes, within lifetimes, we're changing. And so when the Buddha saw that, of course, this gives him the big insights into impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and also non-self. And when he saw that, then the next thing was to see the defilements, that see them in terms of the defilements, our attachments to the world, to experiencing the world. This is what gets us reborn, one of the things that gets us reborn. We want to be here. We want to hear, smell, taste and touch, all those things that we like. And that's a very strong attachment. And he saw that attachment, and he saw the other ones, the other attachments. We want to keep getting reborn. And the last one, he saw the ignorance that thinks that these things are worthwhile, the ignorance that doesn't understand the Four Noble Truths. And having seen that, he saw the cause of those defilements, he saw the end of them and the path to the end of them, they say. And when he saw these defilements in those terms, he knew that they had been destroyed, that what had to be done had been done, and that there would be no rebirth for a person that's arrived at that state of understanding. So that's the whole path in a nutshell, and that there would be no future existence. So that gives you from beginning to end. And this was the first teaching he gave these people, really in depth, but not a lot of theory, a lot of more practical. So this evening I'd just like to, I won't go into it, to focus on one of those. For our meditation, any one of these links, especially the earlier ones, can be very useful. So as I said, you know, developing more faith, confidence in the Buddha, in the Buddha's teachings, and understanding by reading them, actually reading the texts is very, very useful. And they're available on Sutta Central. Or, you know, and also developing our virtue or ethical behaviour. That's a great support for the meditation. Developing contentment is important, very important, and as is developing the idea of sense restraint. I think it's even more important these days when we get bombarded with so much in the senses. I always liken it to, you know, we have to be selective. We don't just go for junk food. In the same way, with what all the input, we can pick and choose what is good, healthy food, good for the mind. We can see that when we see, hear or smell, taste and touch that, it doesn't lead to negative states of mind. Then we know that's health food for the mind. And also that we can develop this full awareness and mindfulness, and also practice to let go of the hindrances. These are all supports for the meditation. So this evening I'd like to focus on contentment. And I was going to give an explanation of contentment, but I've given you more of an explanation of the gradual training. And this gives you the whole context of the Buddha's, of meditation and the Buddha's teaching. Sometimes they learn meditation, but no context at all. They just, you know, it's like mindfulness. They just go to a class and they learn mindfulness, but they don't know what it's for. What's the purpose? And of course, the purpose of meditation is happiness here and now, happiness in the future lives, and the possibility of seeing deeply into the nature of reality and awakening, becoming enlightened. So that's the purpose. But in many situations, people won't learn that. They won't hear that. So it's very good to have an idea of where meditation fits in the Buddha's path. And this is it. And it's a very, very central place, because the mind is the key, isn't it, to our experience. The mind is the key to liberation. So this is the important thing. So now, let's finish with the talking. Let's start with the meditation. So the meditation will roughly be for about 45 minutes. And please find a comfortable posture. Sitting on a cushion, sitting on the chair, however it is. And for those that are watching or listening to this at home, and as I mentioned, we'll be focusing on contentment during this meditation. So important for us just to feel how the body is now. Making any adjustments that we need to. Just feeling how aligned, how balanced the body is, you know, like the head over the shoulders over the hips. Everything feels comfortable. And we come into the present moment just to be here, to let go of the past and the future, whatever's happened today. And what will happen in the future, we can let them, leave them at the door, leave them outside. And we are free in the present moment, free of the past. All that went right, all that went wrong in the past. Free of all the excitement or fears of what's going to happen in the future. Just here in the present moment. Now we can relax the body mentally. It's a very important part of the meditation, actually. Starting at the top of the head and the back of the head, side of the head, and soothing, relaxing those areas with this warm, relaxing attention. And moving down to the forehead, soothing that, soothing any wrinkles, any furrows, relaxing the forehead. And then moving the attention down to the eyes, the cheeks, around the mouth and chin, and giving this warm, kind attention, like a mental massage. Now moving our attention down to the neck, all around the neck, soothing it, relaxing the neck. Now bringing to mind the right shoulder and moving our attention along the right shoulder, releasing, relaxing any sense of tension, any sense of burden. Now bringing to mind the right shoulder, a right arm, starting at the shoulder, moving our attention down the right arm, all around it, to include the elbow, wrist, hand and fingers. Relaxing them, soothing them, giving the right arm a mental massage. Now bringing to mind the left shoulder, starting at the neck and moving our attention along the left shoulder with this kind, warm, relaxing, soothing attention. Bringing to mind the left arm, starting at the shoulder and moving the attention down the left arm all around to include the elbow, the wrist, hand and fingers, giving them this mental massage. Now bringing to mind the back, starting just below the shoulders and moving our attention down the back, soothing it, relaxing it with this kind, warm attention. And now we can bring to mind the front of the body, starting just below the shoulders and moving our attention slowly down the front of the body to include the chest, the diaphragm, the stomach and the abdomen, giving these areas this mental massage, relaxing, soothing any tight areas, any tense areas. Now bringing to mind the right leg, starting at the top of the leg and moving our attention slowly down the right leg all around to include the knee, ankle, foot and toes. This warm, soothing attention. Now bringing to mind the left leg, starting at the top of the left leg and moving our attention slowly down the left leg, all around, to include the knee, the ankle, foot and toes. Soothing, relaxing, mentally massaging the left leg. Now becoming aware of the whole body, just sitting here. And bringing up the intention to be content to be here, happy to be here, content to have this opportunity to meditate together. Know where we need to go and nothing we need to do, just to be here, happy to be here. We can see if this brings up a feeling of contentment for us. You know, this idea, this phrase, happy to be here. Or if you can think of a situation, if you remember a situation where you feel very content, maybe it's being in nature on a warm day, going for a walk in the bush. Something that aroused contentment. Getting in touch with that feeling of being happy to be here. And we can fill our bodies and minds with this feeling of contentment, of relaxation, of being at peace here in the present moment, content with it. just content with whatever we experience in the present moment. Whether they be sounds, the temperature of the room, just content. The touch of our clothes on the body. Just happy to be here. And this feeling of contentment, being happy to be here, can colour whatever we experience. Whatever we are aware of in the present moment, moment by moment, happy to be here with that. And when the breath comes to our attention, we can have this feeling of being happy to be here, this contentment, giving this feeling of contentment to the breath coming in and going out, this warm feeling of not wanting anything else at the moment, just to be here, happy to be here. With the breath coming in and out. Feeling the ease of the breath just coming and going naturally. Just content to be with it. Like waves coming into the beach and going out. Breath coming in and going out. If the mind drifts off, we can just bring to mind, happy, happy to be here. And now, as we're coming close to the end of the meditation, we can share whatever feelings of contentment, happy to be here, peace, stillness, whatever feelings that we experienced with everyone here and all those participating online. That feeling, those feelings of happy to be here, or peace, stillness. And we can share that feeling with all those people and beings that we're close to. Our friends, family, pets. All those that we're close to. Sharing these feelings of contentment, ease, peace, happy to be here. And we can share these feelings with all beings everywhere for their contentment, well-being, peace, happiness. Particularly those beings in difficult situations like wars or economic hardship, poverty, hunger. And now we can just reflect on the meditation as to how do we feel now? Do we feel different from when we began? And did we feel the contentment of being happy to be here or not? And what caused these feelings we experienced to arise? And lastly, did these feelings help the meditation? Become more peaceful, more still, more content. And we can develop the aspiration or intention to develop more of this feeling of being happy to be here, as much as we can, wherever we find ourselves, and as much as with everything we do. Even the difficult things in life. To make it a habit, a refuge for our minds and hearts. A sense of contentment, of being at home with ourselves. And we can anchor this feeling of being happy to be here in our hearts and minds. And now I will ring the bell 3 times, and those who wish to come out of meditation, you're welcome to. If you wish to continue, fine. So we can slowly move the body and open the eyes, if we wish to. So if anyone has any questions, you're welcome to ask them. We have this microphone. If you would like to ask any questions, you're welcome. Yeah, now we have a microphone. It's great, because I feel like if the meditation has worked for us, we probably won't have many questions at all, because this is what the mind calms down, it becomes more peaceful, more still, and those questions tend to not arise if the meditation has really settled down. So this is, and especially if we're developing contentment, because contentment is a state of mind that brings a lot of stillness, actually. Because when we're content, we don't have to do anything. The thing that keeps us busy is all the wanting, all the desires we have. They keep us on the move, actually. But contentment brings us to stillness. And I like one of the sayings of the Buddha is that contentment is the highest wealth, the greatest wealth. So it's not so much how much we have, what we have, possessions, not so much how much power we have, how much status we have. It's contentment. We don't need any of those things in order to be content. And probably people who have a lot of power, a lot of status, a lot of possessions, want more, or they're worried about hanging on to it. That's always a challenge as well. So far from contentment. And of course, you know, contentment in our daily life is really important. Just being content with what we have is actually quite, brings a lot of peace to the mind. If we have contentment with the, you know, clothes we have, the food we have, the medicines we have, and the place that we live in, then if we feel that this is good, this is enough, and that is a sense of contentment. For a lot of people, no, more clothes, more shoes, more different types of food, and getting a bigger house or a house with a view or an apartment with a view, all these things, finding the perfect medicine, all these things, they drive us and they make our lives less simple. And when we have contentment, our lives are much more simple, a lot less complex actually. And as I say, we feel wealthy, we feel like, yeah, this is enough. But of course, this is not what is being promoted in our society. There's always the feeling you could do much better and you could be much happier if you got this, if you had that. And of course, that's far away from contentment. As soon as we desire something, want something, we're not content, we're discontent. We think we could do better. And of course, it's not only with external things, it's with ourselves. We're not necessarily content with ourselves, accepting of ourselves. We always feel we could be much better looking, better, smarter, all these sorts of things, whatever it is. So, contentment is not something that's small, and it's very important for the spiritual path, because obviously when we have contentment, we tend to settle down in the present moment. It reduces our restlessness. We tend to go inside because that feeling is very pleasant of contentment. It's what people are really looking for in life. Even when they amass huge wealth and everything, they're often looking for the sense of contentment. And of course, it probably becomes more difficult the more they have, actually, the more complexity in our lives. So, I was wondering if there's any online questions then. Sridhar, yes, thank you.
Yes, there's a couple of questions coming in online.
Oh, yes.
Can you hear me through the mic there?
Can you hear? Yeah.
The first question here is, I sometimes see white light during meditation. Why is that? I don't think it is a limiter because I don't really feel like I'm going to sleep.
Right. No, you can experience light in the mind. You know, I think most meditators have experienced that, where the mind just feels very light, you know, as in a light. Not necessarily a nimitta. A nimitta is sort of usually a circular light that the mind finds very attractive, and it's brilliant, can be various colours, and then the mind is really focused on it, drawn into it. But there is this sense that we, and I experience too, you feel like there's a light on in the mind. You may be sitting in a dark room, but the mind feels quite light. It's a feeling that an experience which is sort of associated with being quite aware, being energy in the mind. And often the Buddha talks about this lightness in the mind, the light in the mind, as an antidote to feeling dull and drowsy, because the mind has some energy. And in fact, you know, when we feel tired, it's good to have an external light on. In the evening, if I feel tired, I just leave the light on when I'm meditating, because that keeps the mind, it can actually bring up more energy in the mind. Because if it's dark, then the mind has a signal, sleep time. So it is very useful. So bringing light up in the mind, it can be a deliberate intention actually to bring light into the mind. And I think do many people have that experience here, light in the mind? Yeah. You don't have. It just happens, you know. It's not generally something that you intend, but you just notice, you know. It feels like, oh, someone switched a light on. you know, and it's it means the mind is alert. It's got some energy in it, and not drowsy. So that's it's quite a good thing. It may not be these nimittas, these super attractive, usually discs, in the light in the mind, but it is a very good. It means it's energy and there's awareness. So, thank you for that, Sri Juth.
Thank you, Ajahn. I'll just check if there's any questions from the floor before I go to the next online question.
Yeah.
Okay. The next question is, when sharing merit with those suffering from war or hunger, I feel distressed. Is there any advice? Because I was thinking about their suffering and suffering from... might be a typo here, me suffering from them, I guess, sorry, because I was thinking about their suffering and suffering from them, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, right, yes. Yes, we have to be skillful with sharing merit, not because we want to be of help to others and to ourselves, you know. We don't want to, as Ayakema used to say, create two sufferers instead of one. It's, you know, we want to actually be helpful for ourselves and for others, and to see that this feeling of wanting to help others, to free them from their sufferings and difficulties, lifts us up and gives us energy. One of the reasons that I always like to share merit at the end of the meditation is that feeling of wanting to give, wanting to help. And it really energizes our practice. Then it's not just for me. Sometimes people say, oh, it's so selfish, you know, they're just meditating for themselves. But when you share that merit, you know, it's like sharing the energy of whatever you've developed in the meditation, whether it be some peace, stillness, this contentment. When we do that, it's like some gift we're giving to others. So it feels, it gives us more energy, lifts us up, as it were, and can affect other people depending on the strength of the mind. You know, because if the mind is very strong, if the mind's developed this one-pointedness, it gives it enormous power, and then to spread merit then can be very, very strong. And I know one of my experiences from my first teaching, when I was doing my first teaching as a Buddhist monk at the meditation group near the monastery, and I was doing a meditation. I don't know what the subject was, but it wasn't on loving kindness. And then I had these waves and waves of loving kindness coming through me. I thought, my goodness, where are they coming from? Because it just didn't feel like I wasn't, you know, there was nothing, no cause that I was generating that I could see that would bring it up. And so, of course, I thought of Ajahn Brahm, and because he's got a powerful mind, and if he directed loving kindness, metta, then I think it would travel a long way. And also, I found out later too, one of the persons there at that meditation, that was when her main meditation was metta, and she'd really developed it into quite a powerful meditation. So it could have been her too. She probably saw, oh, he looks a bit nervous and worried, and sent out super metta or something. So it could have been either of them. I don't know the source, but it certainly felt like it was coming from somewhere else. So it's good to realize that there is a power that our minds can affect others. And that's one of the things that Ajahn Brahm usually when he ends a meditation retreat, he does a loving kindness meditation. And it's usually very, very powerful, very strong. But he always says to people at the end of the meditation, direct that loving kindness to particular people, you know, maybe friends and so on. And when you go home, just ask, what did you feel at a particular at that time? You know, you ask them, sort of not too leading. The question can't be too leading. You can't say, did you feel a lot of metta? but just check up, you know, because after, say, 9 days of meditating, the mind's got quite a bit of strength in it. And so then, as it were, we can broadcast a lot more than usual, because our minds are generally scattered and not that powerful. But after a 9-day retreat, there is quite a bit of energy, quite a bit of power as well. So really, really good. So with the suffering, when we think of other people's situations, of course, this is not helpful for us. And we need compassion, always needs a sense of wisdom with it as well. So that is something I can suggest to that person, because as I mentioned, if we start suffering, then there are two sufferers. And certainly, I mean, when we suffer, we can't be very effective. We can't be very helpful. And it's like, you know, a doctor or a nurse, if they get too caught up in the situation, they're just not going to be able to perform well, you know. So it's easy to say this, but when we think of people suffering, think of people in the Ukraine or people in Sri Lanka who are going through a very, very difficult time, to identify with it, empathize with it. But in reality, it is better if we can step back, certainly send that compassion, that metta to them, but not get caught up in that suffering as well. Part of the way we can do that is through equanimity. Equanimity has this feeling of acceptance of how things are at the present moment, and realizing that the way things are, the situations people get caught up in, whether it be in a personal sense or in a larger society or country, is due to causes and conditions that have come together at that time. And that sort of understanding, that sort of wisdom, it's not cold. It's got the warmth of metta too, because we realize they're in that situation because of conditions, being, say, born in the Ukraine, and a lot of other conditions, you know, the political conditions building up in the Ukraine, in Russia, throughout the world. And so, you know, developing that equanimity, that acceptance, then can be very helpful for one. But it's wisdom that will really balance compassion and make it possible to give compassion without suffering as well. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks.
Thank you, Arjun. We've got 2 minutes left. We've got 3 questions. So perhaps are you able to take one more question?
Yeah, one more question. All right. Yeah, it's an interesting one.
The question is, I often find myself obsessing over problems, obsessing over a problem or to optimize something. What is the best way to stop thinking about it?
Right. Obsessing about a problem in order to optimize the result, I guess. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously, I think these days they call it, what do they call it? Overthinking, I think that's what they call it. Overthinking, you know, getting caught up with trying to find the perfect solution. And I think that's part of the problem, is we want to get it exactly right, get it perfect. And of course, that will lead to a lot of thinking, you know. So, but if we think, well, I'll give it what I've got, and however it comes, however it works out, that's so be it, you know. If we can let go of it, that personal, you know, wanting to get it perfect, get it really right, then we can let go of a lot of the thinking as well. Oftentimes, isn't it really, the thinking is much more difficult than the doing. You know, often these things, when we actually do them, they just naturally flow, and the thinking actually can be a real impediment to doing something well. So it's not so much, we like to figure everything out, but some things, if we just do it, it works. I know it's a very Nike thing to say. Just do it, they say, don't they? Just do it. But, we try to figure out everything, you know. And, of course, that it's not necessarily, if we can focus on the fact that it's not necessarily going to lead to the best result, actually, then that can be helpful for just letting go of the thinking. So I hope that was helpful, and I'm sure everybody's heard that, just do it. So thank you very much for this evening. It's always a pleasure to meditate together and the group energy. And I hope to see you next month. I'll be back next month, but next week, of course, there will be Ajahn Mudito, I think, will be teaching next Monday. So wonderful. So for those who would like to, we can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, and we can develop the gradual training in our life, particularly contentment.